All right, everybody, welcome to Pro Wrestling Wire Radio here on ProWrestlingWire.com. This is Rick Del Sando, excuse me, and I have a very special guest here today, the Mighty Bosch. How are you today?
Good, how are you?
I'm fantastic. Today we're going to hear talk about pro wrestling. Is that that's what we're talking about here, and your career. So I want to know a little bit about your career.
It's an interesting career because it's a career in two parts. So depends on which parts you want to talk about.
So I just want to know, seeing that we are here on video and you can view this on obviously on YouTube. Is that a record collection behind you?
No,
shelves? No. Comic books?
Those are various role-playing gaming books and some other wonderful things.
Okay. Yeah, I was looking at the
collections in a different style. You're in it.
Okay. Okay. You do collect records.
Yes.
So
I love vinyl. Yep.
Really? Yeah, me too. I've been collecting since I was born in 1975. So I've been collecting since shortly after that, I guess. Fair I could say. So
see, I was born in 77.
We're right. So we've got lots of different, well, I mean, that's when music was at its finest. I mean, there's a lot of great music today, but
sure. It's
not as easy to find, I guess you could say. Maybe.
Yes. I find, at least where I'm based out of and everything like that, we have a lot of old vintage vinyl and record stores scattered throughout.
Yeah. So
being able to walk into those places and find some stuff is a lot of fun. So. I remember the first album I ever got was Thriller was Michael Jackson's Thriller. I unfortunately loved the album so much that it disintegrated on me many years ago. So, but you know, as vinyl
I've
as been
there. I've played records to no end. I think when we were in high school, and we will, I promise everybody listening that we will get to the wrestling part. When I was in high school, a bunch of kids put out a 7-inch 45, and I literally, you know, I was very good friends with them and loved that band so much. I wore the record out in just a weekend's time. So
must have been a good band.
I absolutely love them. So what do you collect as far as that goes? Just anything?
Mainly I find I like going through back and getting like the old school stuff, a lot of old school rap, a lot of old school hip hop, glam rock, stuff like that. You know, the stuff that we grew up with.
Right.
They pull that stuff up, you know, I picked up Raising Hell by Run DMC not too long ago. So, and the benefit to this, the beauty about this is that I have a 15-year-old who is a child of the modern age, you know? So she listens to all these things and hears all these stuff on like TikTok and Insta Reels and all that other crazy stuff. And I'm like, no. Let me educate you on what the actual song is and not this 30-second blurb that got sped up and chipmunked. Having that conversation with her was really fun. I forget. There was a TikTok trend going around and they had taken a sample of It's Tricky, sped it up, auto-tuned it, did the whole weird thing with it. So it sounded not so much like the chipmunks, but it was kind of like the chipmunks. And I'm looking at it, I'm like, you know the words, but do you actually know the song? And, you know, I get the, Dad, what are you talking about? And I'm like, okay, so we're going to do this. And I played her the Run DMC original, obviously. And then I played her the Bloodhound Gang cover. And she's looking at me like I have just performed the greatest feat of magic the world has ever known. So being able to bond with her and teach her history and also have her garner an appreciation for vinyl on top of everything else has been really cool, because she got a record player, we started buying her vinyls and things like that, and it's new stuff and old stuff. Like, she's very big into Lana Del Rey and things like that. But it's fun because it's weird little trips that we'll do when she's around, and we'll go to record stores and she'll see stuff and see things and the stuff fires and everything like that. And she's not just buried in TikTok land.
I worked in a record store for 30 years as part time. So mind you, I brought home records every day, basically.
course,
So,
as you want to do.
and at one point, I had over 5,000 records in my collection, and I anything from 50s and 60s rock and roll to punk rock to hip hop and R&B, especially 70s R&B, you know, 60s 70s R&B, and I still collect like newer bands. You know, I ended up through life challenges and stuff like that selling that entire collection at one point. And did I ever regret that? Yes, I absolutely did, because I had some gems I could never find, and I DJed for a while as well.
So,
So yeah, so however, the last couple years I've been purchasing a lot of records back again, as time allows and monetary situations allow as well. So it's just
I get
I
it.
love it, you know. Yeah.
Definitely fun.
Yeah,
Fun
it
stuff.
is. And I'm getting stuff in the mail. I know this week that you know, I just cannot wait to get.
Anything good?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you're familiar with the Dead Kennedys at all?
Yes.
Yes. So there's a single that I guess there was a tribute to, what was it, Nick Fitzpatrick, who was the original, I guess, folk punk guy that came out many, many years ago, probably. And so there was a tribute album to him, and there was a 45 that Jello Biafra's label put out, with Jello with backing him was Motorama, which was or no, I'm sorry, Motorcycle, which was also, which is like a big, like, I guess, stoner kind of band, psychedelic hard rock band, and named after a 60s cult film. So this record came out, so it's like a split single of them doing one of his songs and then the original version on the flip side, and I can't wait to get it. Supposedly shipped on the 15th. I'm just, you know, this week I can't wait to get it though.
That's gonna be sweet. I love
Yeah,
stuff like that.
yeah. Me too. Me too. So I've been kind of going crazy on like the limited edition stuff that I, back in the day, and never cared about that stuff. But lately I'm like, oh my goodness, house is coming apart.
No.
this is in the lately I've been doing things like, such as purchasing things that are, you know, the Descendants and the Circle Jerks just put out a single that's, they're covering each other's songs. Tour's coming through April. I bought three different versions of it yesterday. Now the fourth version is going to be at the show in New Haven, which is going to be a splatter. And I already bought the red, white, and blue versions. Now there's going to be a splatter version. Descendants are another one of my favorite bands of all time, so I'm just kind of going a little crazy with that. And I never cared about the variants of things until now.
But that's the beautiful thing about having adult money now. Now you get to buy the things that we couldn't buy when we were kids. Like
Right.
that's the thing. Like, okay, nice. Like, no, I absolutely get that's amazing. That's fantastic. That's great.
Yeah, so.
I'll go look into that, see if there's anything, streaming or whatever with those songs, because I'm like, ooh, covers, remixes.
Yeah. Yeah,
That's
there
my
was
jam.
what was it? I know that one site had a thousand of one color, another site had like 1,200, and then there was one site that there was like 500. And when I found out that there was only 500 of one color, I jumped. I was surprisingly able to get it, because I never have that kind of luck ever.
Right. No,
So
yeah. When they do limited runs, absolutely. It's like
yeah.
500 printed, 3 minutes left. You're like,
Yeah.
yeah, no, I get it. I
And they're
absolutely.
already, yeah. So I guess let's talk some professional wrestling.
I
So
guess.
you've been around for quite some time. You've been around the New England area for quite some time. Where did you grow up? Did you grow up in Massachusetts?
No, I actually grew up in Rhode Island. I'm from Rhode Island.
Okay.
I'm actually from Rhode Island, everything like that. I do a lot more traveling now, so and have made some good inroads and connections with people throughout, with promotions throughout like Mass and such like that. So I tend to bop around a lot. It also doesn't hurt that my partner Sid's also from Mass, so it makes things a little bit easier when we have to stage out and get places and things like that. Because depending on which way will make things easier for travel is what we usually do. So.
Right. I'm guessing, seeing that you're not that much younger than I am, excuse me, that you grew up in the 1980s.
Yeah, 80s and
So
90s, 70s.
professional wrestling.
The golden age, yeah.
Yeah. So what was your first experience and what lured you in?
So
I know it's hard. There's so many great times during that era.
So back when I was a kid, my father had his own business and my mother worked with him. So as what would happen, as things would happen, they would work 6 days a week, you know, Monday through Saturday.
Right.
And if I wasn't in school or something like that, then I would be hanging out with my relatives, usually my grandparents on either side. I remember being at one of the first memories I have was being at my maternal grandmother's house, and it was Saturday morning cartoons, bowl of cereal, and then like all-star wrestling or something. Wrestling would come on afterwards. You know, Saturdays and Sundays were great for that because you'd have all the easy stuff in the morning, and then you get wrestling right around lunchtime. And it was something I would watch with my grandmother and everything like that. And, you know, sometimes, again, depending on when it was, you know, this is all before, you know, the Monday Night Wars and Monday Night TV and all that other stuff. You know, we had primetime wrestling, right, things like that, you know, Tuesday Night Titans and stuff. And that's what I would do. I, you know, between my father and my grandma, my mother's mother, my grandmother, it was just what we did. You know, we watched it. It was a different time. You know, it wasn't as accessible. So it was one of the few things that we watched. We weren't a big American sports family because my family, for the most part, you know, everybody from my parents and before are all immigrants. They all came over from Italy at various times. So the normal things that people watch, like baseball and American football and stuff like that, were not things that I was necessarily submerged in, because that's not what we watched. Mm-hmm. We watched auto racing, right, soccer, and things like that. So wrestling was just universal, and it just was something that we could enjoy, you know. And back then, in the 70s, late 70s, 80s, stuff like that, there was a lot more characters and gimmicks and such that were more widely portrayed in people's nationalities. Like, you had your Russian gimmicks and Irish gimmicks and Italian gimmicks and things like that. And that's where a lot of things came from. So,
right. It's something that we have in common. Actually, my dad came here from Italy in 1964. So my family is deeply Italian rooted. And, I find that interesting. You know what I mean? It's like, but wrestling back then, there was a lot of nationalities, like you said, like people lured to, I guess, Italians. They hated the foreigners, such as the Russians and Iranians.
Right.
So that was, it was a product of its time, really. Right. They used like what was going on in the national news as to spew hatred and get heat against these foreign professional wrestlers.
Yeah, no, 100%. Yeah, and again, that's where you have a lot of these. As you know, as we look at the mainstay stuff now and everything like that, you've got stuff like Carlito and Dominic Mysterio and stuff like that, and you have the third and fourth generation, second generations of those various cultures. That this is what it was. This is where we are, and the climate's changed, so they can't really go on that too much, but at the same time, they go on that as hard as they can because it's part of it's part of their history. So, you know, for me, for my family, maybe for you too, but like, even though it was the tail end of his career, Bruno was the guy.
Yes. I was very into Bruno, even though he was way past his prime in 1984 when I discovered professional wrestling. I still, it's just the way that they hyped him up on TV as being this legend. And then I owned the Bruno Sammartino VHS tape that had all those matches from his heyday. You know what I mean? That they put out as Coliseum Pro Wrestling or Coliseum Video. Excuse me. Coliseum Video.
Yeah.
Thinking Coliseum. Yeah, exactly. So it's pretty interesting that they were still hanging on to his popularity from that day, even though he had been way past his prime.
Way past.
They really tried to push. They tried to push his son as the next San Martino. That just,
and he just
failed miserably. Yeah.
He wasn't.
I mean, it's not like he was. It's not like he was terrible. It's just, I think the charisma wasn't there.
That was part of it.
Maybe.
Times were changing too, and everything like that. And back then, legacy wrestlers weren't a thing. You know, we've got legacy wrestlers now, like Dominic Mysterio and Carlito and
Orton.
Roman Reigns and all these other people. Like,
yeah,
that's not how it was. Like, when David Sammartino came out, they tried to move with him, and it just, nobody caught on to it. It wasn't, the magic wasn't there. It wasn't the same for them, you know, and
it
kind of blew up in their face to a point, but I agree. Bruno was definitely the guy, was definitely the man. And again, being of Italian descent and such like that, he was who you cheered for, you know, like everybody else had their own whatever. And yes, we always fought the Russians and the Iranians. So down with Nikolai Volkov and down with the Iron Sheik.
Yeah. As legendary as those guys ended up becoming, and
right.
I mean, I ended up eventually, when you grow up and you start to actually recognize that guy's really great. It's, and how he, you know, obviously being part of the wrestling business, you realize how good that he was just doing his job.
Yeah.
As being hated. Mm-hmm. So what influenced you in getting into the world of professional wrestling?
So growing up, my aside from Bruno, my guys were always like Hogan, the big, larger than life, the comic book and everything like that. And then as we all, as wants to happen to us in a young age, we come to find out, well, it's not real.
Yes.
So that becomes a thing. But as you can tell by my gimmick, I'm a big comic book fan. I like comic books. I like fantasy. I like sci-fi. I like all that stuff. So I was drawn to the appeal of professional wrestling because it was comic books come to life. And everybody can debate, you know, oh, it's this soap opera, oh, it's that. In effect, it's comic books come to life. You have these larger-than-life characters in these colorful costumes who come out and fight the forces of good, evil, and everything else. And it's head-to-head sometimes, and then sometimes. So I got really drawn into the storyline and everything like that. And I had found out through watching and learning and being submerged into all that, that when the opportunity for me to try to get into something that would work for professional wrestling, because I had that dream, like I wanted to be a pro wrestler, not realizing exactly how tough it is to become a pro wrestler. I started actually shoot wrestling. I played soccer. I did high school, middle school. Well, we called it junior high at the time. I got into junior high school wrestling. I played soccer. You know, I did track and field and things like that. And these were all things that I had found out through various items, whether it was in, you know, PW Illustrated or Pro Wrestling Insider or any of the other kind of magazines and stuff, that like all these guys or a lot of these guys had come from these various backgrounds. And again, back then, a lot of the guys came from not being able to make it in the NFL or anything like that. And I was like, well, I'm not playing football because I couldn't stand the football coaches in my area because I wasn't doing that. But I found a lot of them had a wrestling background, a grapple background.
Mm-hmm.
So I started doing grappling in school, you know, and I did grappling from junior high school, basically seventh grade, all the way through to my first year at college. So like that was the thing. And then circumstances happened and injuries came about and I wasn't able to do the wrestling in college anymore. Like takes its twists and turns. And I end up linking up with some guys in a random college class. And the next thing I know is like, hey, we're filming for this promotion. Why don't you come down? You're still pretty jacked from being on the wrestling team. Why don't you come and basically try out? And I went, and the rest was history. 1996, I debuted for an indie company in Rhode Island, and I went 4 years.
Who was this, and who trained you there?
So I debuted for Power League Wrestling,
Okay.
which was before I had gone there, was started by Brutal Bob Evans and a couple of other people. But by the time I
Gotcha.
debuted in there, Bob had started becoming a little bit more. Bob was making inroads into professional companies and was being used as like enhancement talent and stuff like that. Like he had been on
Right.
WWF TV at the time a few
Yeah.
times. And
I
so,
remember seeing him. I remember seeing his tryout match there. I think they aired on, like, I wouldn't say Heat, but whatever the equivalent was at the time.
right. So,
Maybe it was Heat. I don't know. Yeah.
but I worked for them, and this is where the story gets a little deep. I wasn't necessarily trained in the way we think of training now. I got in and I had my shoot background and everything like that, and I was talking to some guys and the people that I was put up against as opponents, and we would just go, and you'd have 15-minute, 20-minute matches and stuff like that in front of a crowd of 30, 40, 50 people. And it was kind of a learn as you go thing.
Right.
There wasn't like a school or anything like that. It was a learn as you go. And at some points, things started to go, make started to click. And I was like, okay, I need to learn how to do these more basic things better in the way that it's supposed to be done for pro wrestling. Otherwise, I'm going to hurt somebody because I was
Learn
coming from
to,
a shoot background.
right. So, like,
So,
learn to fall or learn to hit
right.
properly or to, pull your punches, a little bit, et cetera, et cetera.
I
Yeah.
needed, and it was even simpler than that. I needed to do a proper lockup because I was doing shoot lock. I was basically wrestling like I was still in college, which can work, but I didn't have the foundations of pro wrestling to actually do that properly. So it got a little muddled and everything like that. And a bunch of the guys working at the time, pulled me aside, and or if I asked them for a little bit of help, they would work with me a little bit and everything like that. And back then it was Derek Mulholland, who wrestled under the name Derek the Defenseman. Bob, obviously. Bob would come back from time to time and like give instruction and stuff like that. Matt Storm, Kyle Storm, TJ Richter, a bunch of people, and that's kind of how I got my overall training done, because I had my foundations, but then I got into the, oh, I actually need to do this right, so maybe I should learn, and go from there.
I actually wrestled 3 years in high school, and I know that the rigors of that, like training and stuff like that, are just extremely difficult. Like my coaches were kind of, they'd make us run the stairs on, winter days and stuff like that, running up and down the stairs. We'd run up, I mean, it was just something that was very difficult. So, I mean, I know, and I've never wrestled professionally. I've never trained. I have gone to, schools and hung out. Spoke to my, classes during, like, Mario Mancini's classes and stuff like that, and hung out with him while watching. I mean, just like there's quite a difference, I guess, between the two. But the people that have, say, the amateur backgrounds, how do you, like, how would you say that transfers over in a way? Like, would you say that makes a big difference in some of these guys' careers that have that amateur background,
It
moving
depends on
to a
the guy.
professional?
It depends on the guy, and it
Yeah.
depends on the training and everything like that. And like if you've got a year or two of amateur styling, it's not necessarily detrimental and it doesn't necessarily hurt. But
Right.
the thing about it's like any kind of martial art or anything like that. It's not just amateur wrestling. Whatever you're taught in whatever discipline you're learning, be it, karate, taekwondo, Muay Thai, kickboxing, amateur wrestling, Greco-Roman wrestling, stuff like that. You have to, there comes a point where you have to unlearn all the muscle memory that you've developed because it doesn't necessarily translate as well. For me, I was able to translate it in those days better because that was my gimmick. I used my shoe background as the character, even though the character, even though what I was trying to portray was not necessarily as refined as it could have been. But things like belly to bellies, belly to backs, Germans, headlocks, stuff like that, it's where the foundation of pro wrestling comes from. So that transition's a little bit easier. You just got to make sure you're not actually trying to rip somebody's head off while you're doing the move, especially if they don't have any idea that that's what's coming to. I think myself, now looking back on it then, I think my transition was my ability to transition and compensate and work with it was good. I just regret not getting a more formalized basics when I was there. That's a twofold problem because back then it wasn't as easy to get training because there weren't that many schools around back then.
It was a different time period.
And Kowalski's, I think, was the only or one of the only schools in the area at the time. And he was 2 hours away from where I was. And I was also trying to, there was my real life that I was working on too, because I was in college and trying to earn a degree and, or, life did all sorts of crazy stuff. So it depends. Like anybody can learn how to pro wrestle, but not everybody can pro wrestle, if that makes sense. You know what I'm saying? Like,
I get it.
so there's a lot that can be done and a lot that can be learned and relearned and unlearned, but sometimes you gotta take a look at yourself and be like, yeah, all right, I want to do this, but I can't do this. For me, it was I can do this and I want to do this. So I did it. And
So,
fun.
was it difficult or was it very challenging for you? Would you say?
It was looking back on it now, it was difficult. Back then, I thought it was the easiest thing in the world. But that's
Wow.
also why I only worked for 4 years and then disappeared into the realm of the unknown.
There's also people that, they always discount the way professional wrestlers are, and not necessarily calling them athletes or saying that it's a lot easier than it is. And have you ever had that experience with somebody? And maybe I've heard stories of people saying, "Hey, come down to the school and I'll show you how difficult it actually is." I mean, I've heard stories like that.
I
And then
mean,
people just be like, they're in much more pain than they actually anticipated.
I've heard people, oh, it's fake, oh, it's a blah blah blah, and have, the requisite response of being, well, if you think it's fake, why don't you come down and we'll show you what's really going on and everything like that. I've had acquaintances and friends like that say stuff to me, and then they'll go off and randomly see something on a video, a reel, whatever pops up on their Facebook, because I'm like absolutely independent of anything. And then they come back and be like, "Is that guy still alive? Like, what that like?" And you have to sit there and go through it. And I've never had to myself do that with anyone, but I've heard the stories too. And you always get the wise guy or whatever who's always like, "Oh, I can do that. It's easy. It's no big deal." It's like, buddy, you don't understand. 10 minutes in the ring is a hell of a lot of cardio. It's way more than you think.
Yeah, I could only imagine. I've like I said, I've never actually stepped foot in the ring, but I've heard many, many stories of people just being, you know what I mean? Because it's a whole different animal training to be a professional wrestler and be able to go 10 minutes, 15, even some guys an
Yeah.
hour,
The first time I went, when I came back in 2019, the first time I had been in like a rumble and went for like, I think it was an hour or as close to an hour as you could. I entered in at like number one and was final three. When I got dumped over the ropes, I didn't make it back to the locker room. I laid on the floor because I was just so exhausted, man. Granted, I had just come back and my conditioning was not nearly what I had wanted it to be and everything like that, but at the same time, like, it was insane. When I was doing amateur wrestling, I would wrestle sometimes in tournaments 3-4 times in a day.
Yep. And
this was nothing like that. This was so much more intense and so much more, because if you don't learn to pace yourself, if you don't understand how important breathing is in these situations, and knowing how to manage your time while in there for that long, you're lucky if you don't fall asleep right there and then. You know, it's insane.
So you've been basically known as the Mighty Bosch throughout your entire career. Is this correct?
Yeah.
So you've been doing the superhero gimmick throughout for the last, and I'm showing that you said 1996. I can confirm that with my notes here. So that's close to 30 years, really, that you've been wrestling. That's pretty incredible. But you took a little bit of time off. How long did you take off?
20 years.
20? Yeah. Wait, what?
Yeah. Okay. So this is where where part of my return is trying to help all the youngins, the younglings, all the new breed, the new blood that's come out. I started in 96. I wrestled until end of 99, early 2000.
Yes.
I was a self-absorbed, entitled 20-year-old, as we are wont to be sometimes when some of us get to be that age. I thought I was better than what I was around. And my attitude and my feelings toward things basically stopped getting me bookings. There wasn't a lot of promotions around back then, and the ones that were around were very close-knit and couldn't just work. You couldn't work in more than one promotion at the time because it was a little bit more territorial at the time. And also, there weren't any promotions around. In Rhode Island, there were like three, I think. Maybe four. And I wasn't traveling outside of Rhode Island at the time. So any in Massachusetts weren't even an open possibility for me, because just couldn't connect with anyone. Because back then it was make a VHS tape, mail it off to the promoter, hope they get information, maybe you get a phone call. And it's not like it is today, which sometimes
everything's email or DM with links or what have you,
some formal paper. Messenger. Yeah. Exactly. Like there's a lot better interconnectivity nowadays for obvious reasons.
Right.
So I stopped getting bookings. And again, had you asked me then, I would have given you some lame ass, it's them, not me thing. Having that much time away and everything like that, it was definitely more of me and my attitude than anything else. But life happened too. You know, I started seeing people. I was having trouble in college. Things changed. Life changed. I won't say I necessarily hit rock bottom, because it wasn't anything that dramatic, but like I ran through some rough patches and had to climb myself back out and everything like that.
We all do, yeah.
Right. And then, you know, as much as I wanted to get back into it, it started getting farther and farther away from me. And, you know, I had health issues and I had other things come up, and then you rebound and come back. And then I got married and I started a family, and that became the priority. And then slowly that dissolved and things happened. And then, you know, you bounce back and you crawl back up. And by the time I could effectively look into trying to get back, 15 years had gone by. You know, and I was out of shape. I was out of the scene. I was not connected to anybody anymore. Anybody who I knew who was doing it or had done it at the time wasn't part of it anymore, or may or may not have remembered me.
Right.
And you know, the self-doubt comes in. Well, they knew me back then when I was 22. Maybe they still think I'm this pompous ass. And it became crazy. So I ended up working in other mediums and stuff like that. Like I did radio in college for a bit, got into a couple of movies as like a background character and things. You know, I tried starting a career, you know, focusing on family and stuff. It got all sorts of wacky. And then, you know, fate happens and intervenes, and one thing led to another, and I got linked up with some people, and foot's been on the gas ever since.
Yeah. I believe you returned in 2019. Is this correct?
Yes. Yeah.
So that's not too far.
Yeah, April 2019.
Hey, that's in my nose. All right. April 19th, 2019. So,
yes.
I think that's about the time that I started hearing your name, because that's about the time that I started getting into it, or in, you know, as an announcer or podcaster in my career in radio, college radio, community radio. I had been away from radio for a number of years, and all of a sudden I was like, oh man, I want to do something again. I was looking into radio stations and right. stuff like that. And I just said, fuck it, I'm going to do a podcast. So, and then all of a sudden it just became, hell, I went to my, you know, Paradise Alley show one day and I said, screw it, I'm just going to do a wrestling podcast. Forget doing radio. You know what I mean? So,
sure.
And that's what made me decide to do wrestling podcasts. Now it's almost 5 years later. Jesus, it's kind of, yeah, my first episode was 2019 and now here I am. So it's kind of, yeah, so I think that's around the time I started hearing your name, when I started going and getting into a lot of indie shows, like a lot, and covering a lot of stuff for that podcast. And I think I had seen your name elsewhere, probably through Mr. Don Kincaid or what have you. So wow. I think that he had posted some stuff, and then I believe you made maybe two Paradise Alley appearances. Am I correct? Maybe in an alley fights.
I've done
East Haven.
Two alley fights. I think I've done
two alley fights. Yeah,
I've done two alley fights.
Yeah,
and it wasn't just
yeah.
alley fights and stuff like that. Yeah, 2019 I came back, got booked for a Brick House Baker show. Completely on a whim. I hadn't even been, it was a House of Brick show in Orleans, Massachusetts, which is like just outside Cape Cod.
Right.
And, I had been back training for all of like a month and a half. Like it wasn't.
Not full wrestling shape, I guess you could say.
Absolutely. 100%. Right. And I get. And it's a completely different world than what I knew almost 20 years beforehand. So it's like, I don't really know what's going on. Like my nerves are up and everything like that. And the funniest thing about that match was I get put in a 2-on-3 handicap match.
Mm-hmm.
And the combined experience of everybody in that ring still didn't equal the amount of experience I had having been away for 20 years. So it was like, oh my God, what am I going to do? So we got through the match and it was a lot of fun, and the bug had bitten, and I was definitely like, yes, I am back where I need to be, and this is what I need to do. And slowly but surely, I started making the rounds and building up and everything like that. And then before I got to Paradise Alley, I ended up working, I want to say it was Battlefront Extreme, but I'm not 100% on that one.
Was that Rhode Island or was that Massachusetts?
That's Mass.
Massachusetts group. I remember. Yeah, I remember them being around. And I think they just shut down a couple of years back, correct?
Yes. Like,
yeah.
Just after COVID, they tried to come back. But I did Battlefront, and that's where I met Don Kincaid. And Don Kincaid was the one who pointed me in the direction of Paradise Alley, the alley fights and stuff like that. And, Friday nights are really tough for me to do just in general with, you know, the real life job and everything like that. So
adulthood. Yeah.
You know, so, but I was able to get on like that first show, and it was a lot of fun because I got to do things and work with people who I hadn't been around yet.
Mm-hmm.
But there was enough, I had built up enough momentum that people were interested to see what I could do. And then Mario got to see me, and it was like, and I'm pretty sure I made an impression on Mario because I was this old guy, old school guy who came in and wasn't doing 150 moves in a 3 minute match. So
super kicks, swantons, all that fun stuff.
I don't
stuff.
Think I can lift my leg that high. So I don't know if I can ever do a super. But yeah, I've done two alley fights, and they're a lot of fun. I'd love to go back there again. I'd like to just work in more places, you know, and unfortunately, there are I put certain restrictions on myself more for because of family and things like that. Plus, you know, again, my job and stuff makes it a little bit harder to work and do things outside of, you know, in the winter and stuff like that because I'm part of a plowing crew and everything like that. So like, if I'm booked for a show and there's a snowstorm that comes in, I can't be there. I'm sorry, you know, and I don't want to put that sour taste in any promoter's mouth, you know. Understandably, I'm sure they would get it and they would understand why I'm not making it. It's not just like, oh, I'm not coming to your show because I'm gonna go do another one. It's like, no, I got work, but I don't ever want to put someone in that kind of a position. So, but I did work the two Alley Fight shows. I'm will so want to get back there because I have so much fun with those kids and everything like that. And but yeah, it's been a ride. Alley Fight, I've been talking with them. Hopefully that's a promotion I get to pop into in the next couple of months.
So obviously, you spoke about being old school, coming back from the 90s. It's a completely different era than it is today. It's a lot of different move sets and sometimes ridiculousness, I guess. I don't know. It's
Depends on
just
who
a
you are.
different, it depends on who you are. I'm very old school, growing up in the 70s and 80s. So and watching wrestling on TV in the 1980s, it was a little bit different. Well, a lot of bit different, but compare your time as a performer, as a wrestler, coming in that type, in kind of like the tail end of the old school in a way, and then to what goes on today. There's all sorts of, I guess, all sorts of different stuff today. It's like a variety show. If you go to any indie show, there's lots of different things that go on. There's many different styles, you know.
Yes, and I think the biggest difference for me, anyways, was back then we weren't, from what I remember, we didn't call the match outright. It was, here's your time, this is the finish, or this is whatever, go do. Now it's really weird sitting in the locker room and listening to how matches are formatted and the formations of a lot of things, and I give credit to those kids and those guys who can do it like that because that's a skill in and of itself to be able to put all of that together and then remember it all and do it in front of people. One of the things that I remember the most, and a lot of people say this from that era, whether they're TV people or what, it's the problem with doing it like that is that if you don't understand the crowd, no matter how many super kicks you can do or how many Canadian destroyers or how much you can fly, if it's not going to hit with the crowd, it doesn't matter. My biggest thing is that I'm very much about the storytelling. Even if I'm not involved in a storyline, the story of the match is me versus you. I'm the good guy, you're the bad guy. We need to tell the story that the fans can latch on to. And then again, it also depends on what promotion you're working for and everything like that, because you know what I do for my home promotion of RWA doesn't necessarily mean I'm going to do the same things for when I go work for like Pat Dillon at UFO, or if I do another Alley Fights, or if I'm working a Kevin Landry show, or if I'm getting booked somewhere up in Maine for something, you know, it's going to vary. It's going to be different, and that's all going to be different if I'm doing like a birthday show or a fair show. Like I love working for UFO because they do a lot of stuff for the kids and charity, which, you know, my gimmick is very much a part of. But at the same time, there's also Planet Pro Wrestling that I have a ton of fun with. Because they do like a Wishes on Wheels make a wish thing. And that's always a great time. And obviously, all the kids love a superhero, and that's fine. But what we do for a fair show doesn't necessarily need to be the same thing that I do when I'm contending for a title at RWA or 2TW or whatever. And trying to impart that kind of knowledge to this new crop of wrestlers who saw indie wrestling, pro something at some point in time. They saw the Young Bucks. They saw El Generico. They saw whoever, and they want to do all these crazy things. It's like, hey, yo, that's great, but protect your knees, wear knee pads, and you don't need to do 13 Canadian destroyers. You can do one and get more of a reaction for it. So
the most exciting move, I guess, in pro wrestling today. Everybody's using it. The Canadian Destroyer.
And you want to know the crazy thing is when it's when Dustin Rhodes hits it is the one that gets the most recognition.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's Dustin Rhodes. I mean,
oh, well, yeah.
The fact that 50-something-year-old guy could do it, the fact that, you know.
So. Yes, but that's, but that's exactly what I'm saying. Like, but I think one of the few things that we get away from or that has been that people get away from in indie wrestling is that the storytelling aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
Just because you're not necessarily on TV or on a YouTube channel or streaming or Twitch or whatever, doesn't mean you can't have storylines and doesn't mean you can't tell a story.
Right.
And I think a lot of people don't either train it or don't bother explaining it. And they're just worried about, which in and of itself is something that needs to also be taught about doing the moves in the ring safely, which I think is where a lot of focus comes from. But I mean, it's the thing that I see more than anything else is the promoters try to tell a story and they're not getting stories from their workers. And it's something that I think needs to be worked on more than anything else.
Continuous storylines, etc. That make sense, really. So
you're making, that would help if they made sense.
Yeah, that's not always a thing, you know.
It's
mean,
and again,
especially on TV, there's times on television some things don't make sense, like how they flip flop. So it could end up disappointing. Whether it's WWE, AEW, WCW used to do it all the time.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and I think, and it's funny you mentioned that because I was having this conversation the other day, and I think when AEW first hit, I loved it because they were definitely trying to build stories and do storylines and do all that stuff, and that's great. And I think a hiccup that AEW has right now is that a lot of their workers have been doing their gimmicks for so long off TV that they've gotten to the point where they want to do a gimmick change. Or they want to do a character change or a faction change or something like that. And it's very abrupt. You know, you've got the House of Black and Julia Hart and everything like that. And you went from having Julia Hart with the paint and everything like that. Now she's just not doing it no more.
Yeah.
You know, you had Toni Storm and Ruby Soho and Saraya. Now all of a sudden, there's kind of a storyline there, but we're not talking about all the other stuff because Ruby's gone off in this direction. And so, and it just, there's a lot of hard cuts and hard changes. And again, I'm not on TV, so I don't know all the ins and outs and everything like that, especially in that company. But like, there's definitely a lot of things changing because they've been doing those storylines around the indie scene for so long, but the people who are watching them on TV who didn't get to see them do that don't understand why all of a sudden you're not wearing this costume anymore, or why you're not doing this anymore. And it's just it hits that fatigue point, but at the same time it's also like you said, they're doing things that nobody understands and there's no explanation for it, and it kind of throws the whole thing off.
I was really behind AEW when they first started because I guess any big national company that comes in gives us variety, gives people variety, and it's better for business ultimately. And it just, after a while, they just seem to fizzle out, and I didn't really care a lot about what happens on there. I mean, I'm not, you know, I don't watch WWE just as much. I don't know. It's just not nearly what they were building themselves up to be, I guess. Now it's just, but however, the last pay-per-view they did, I thought was a great show beginning to end.
I've heard that. I've heard that from a lot of different people. I didn't get to see it myself, but I'm happy that it got a lot of excitement and a lot of things behind. a lot of people back into it and everything like that, because I think the thing that AEW was trying to give us when they first came out is what they need to get back to, and they need to give us stories again. They need to give us storylines on their various things. I think overall, my biggest problem with AEW, problem, like I have any stake in AEW. The hardest thing I for me when it comes to watching AEW and stuff like that is Moxley's bleeding way too much.
Yes.
It bothers the hell out of me. Like, you don't need to, but it's too much. And I understand on the corporate side of things, it's been tough to get TV deals, but he's got way too many titles that are being showcased, and he's not building up divisions the way they are. You don't need an AEW Trios title and an ROH Trios title. And, you know, like, I get he's got ROH, I get he has AEW, but you know what I want to see more than anything else in AEW? An actual women's tag team title division.
Yeah, that's a great idea. My thing is with Ring of Honor is that they don't spend enough time with it. It's like watching AEW Dark. It's a bunch of squash matches and no continuous storylines. So, you know, the TV, it's like the main event is like where the one storyline is, but then they put these pay-per-views together of all these really great matches. You know what I mean? It's just like some of them don't necessarily make sense because they just kind of seem like they're out of nowhere in a way. Maybe I'm not, I don't know if things have changed, but I know I've tried giving it in a chance when he bought it, but he has really, in my opinion, has really done nothing with the brand after about purchasing it. It's nothing of interest outside of like just the one show every 4 or 5 months or what have
you. And I don't disagree with you on that. And again, I'm not, logistically speaking, or have anything to do or be involved with an ROH and AEW, other than I would like to perform on their shows, which would be great. But, and I know, again, outsider looking in, I don't have all the information, so I don't know where everything is and everything like that. But it just seems like it's gotten to the point, it's almost like WCW back when the NWO was in full force and everybody was a member of NWO. It's like everybody in AEW has got a title now.
Yeah.
Like, got titles, we're adding titles, we're putting new titles, and it's like, it's too much. Like, I don't care about the titles.
And then there's the relationship with New Japan, which they bring their champions over as well. So you're seeing all these titles on TV. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's great to see those guys come over, but in the relationship with them. And then now they have a relationship with CMLL as well. So all these guys, there's just belts. Almost, you could, you know, book a whole show of champions if you really want to. So.
Which is not necessarily a bad thing, but at the same time, if you're just getting it all the time, it loses the specialty of it. So
yeah. Right. So let's see, what else? So what else do you have coming up that you'd like to push, that you'd like to put out there for the people to listen to?
So I've got a couple of there's a couple of different shows over the next couple of months that are really, I'm really, really looking forward to. And sorry, my dog's over in the corner snoring up a storm.
Yeah, right. You heard my kids running around upstairs. Yeah. It's cool. So.
So the big one right now is this coming Saturday. So I don't know when you're going to post this. So March 23rd.
Tonight.
But on March 23rd in East Providence, Rhode Island for RWF, Fatal Impact, which is the show, I get to go one-on-one with the Masshole Mike McCarthy.
Oh, nice.
So if you want to talk about like two old school guys going to have an old school match, like I am psyched for this one. So it's funny because at a different time months ago, almost a year ago, something like that, Mike and I were talking, and we actually, before pro wrestling was a big part of either our lives, Mike was in a punk band or hardcore band. I forget exactly what it was. So Mike, if you're watching, I'm sorry if I got it wrong. but I was doing college radio at the same time after my stint and everything like that. And I'm 90% sure that Mike's band did a show in Providence that the college radio station I was working for was part sponsor to. And I used to work security when we did those things. So I'm almost positive Mike and I have met in a different universe where it was all about music instead of pro wrestling. So the fact that it's the two of us in the ring gives me a lot of tingly feelings, you know, the goosebumps and everything. Because like Mike's been around a while, he's got a hell of a reputation. I've seen him work. I love his work. I'm so excited to work against him just for the sheer fun of it. Like, I think we're going to have a really good match. The card itself for Fatal Impact with RWA is amazing. You should, if anybody is around and available, you should absolutely come check that out at the RWAforever.com website. What else do I got? In April, one of the side projects that Sid and I do, mainly Sid, and I'm sure they'll talk about that more when they come on your show, is we do pro wrestling story time. We go to various libraries around in Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and hopefully branching out farther, we read wrestling picture books. It's going to probably come up backwards and everything like that, but we have Dino Wrestling, and we read Russell Wrestles, and Friday Night WrestleFest, and a bunch of other things. And, you know, so he gets myself and a couple of other wrestlers around the scene to come in, and we read books to the kids, and we do a craft. And, you know, sometimes somebody comes around and gets upset that they didn't get to read a book and needs to challenge me for the Pro Wrestling Storytime Championship. So, you know, and sometimes I got to defend it. And that's just, you know, the fun of it. But it's a great, great time because it's community interaction. It's getting kids in the library. It's getting kids to read. It's fun. It's a lot of crazy, crazy, nutty stuff. I don't have all the details yet, but I know in May we're doing a charity show in Newton, Mass. Okay. I don't have a ton of information about that yet, but that's what I'm looking for. And then at the end of May, Tim Kilgore, who has been around the area for a while, is doing a show called Cabaret Wrestle. It's mm-hmm. a cabaret style wrestling show, which will feature wrestling, burlesque, music, and drag queens. So,
all right,
all encompassing crazy stuff, you know. And after that, who knows? We'll see what happens. Maybe I'll get to Maine. Maybe I'll get back out to Connecticut. Who knows?
Yeah. Put your social media out there, and I want everybody to go click, like, subscribe, share, all that fun stuff. Follow the follow button.
Yes. All the follow. Yeah. Absolutely. We're so close to like big numbers on so many of them. Instagram, Facebook is Mighty Bosch Wrestling, and Twitter is Mighty Bosch.
Okay.
On the socials.
And,
oh, and I have a TikTok too, which is also Mighty Bosch Wrestling, but I'm old. I don't do well on that.
Yeah, I try to update mine, and I'm just a failure at it. So I get, you know, so I need my kids' help. They don't know all about this stuff, how to get thousands of views and all that stuff. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I want to thank you so much for joining me here today. And, you know, we've only, this was an hour. So it's, you know, it's, we're going to have to do this again and probably go another hour. I enjoyed talking with you today.
I had a lot of fun. Absolutely. It's definitely interesting, especially when two guys like us start talking about the golden age and everything like that, you know.
Yeah, you come maybe come
about
back
my career. From,
yeah, maybe come back about from one of the old school reviews or something. So,
hey,
you know,
I'm down for whatever.
All right, thank you everybody. Make sure you go follow and you know, check him out. Go to that Pro Wrestling Story Time. That sounds very interesting.
All right, that's a lot of fun.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.